Stalin was embalmed. On the 9th of March, 1953, Molotov, Beria, and Khrushchev spoke at his funeral, after which he was laid in the mausoleum beside Lenin. Polina Molotova was released next day. Her first question was, "How Stalin?" She fainted when she learned he was dead. Molotov took her home. Beria moved to liberalize the regime and arrested those responsible for the doctor's plot, but his proposal to free East Germany provoked an uprising that alarmed the other magnates. Khrushchev began to plan Beria's destruction. He won over Premier Malenkov and Defense Minister Bulganin. Molotov admired Beria, but agreed to support Khrushchev because of the German crisis. But it was Marshal Zhukov and his generals who provided the muscle. On the 26th of June, Khrushchev stood up at a Presidium meeting and attacked Beria. Bulganin joined in. "What's going on, Nikita?" Beria asked. "Why are you searching for fleas in my trousers?" When it was Malenkov's turn to support the coup, he lost his nerve and gave a secret signal to the generals waiting outside. Marshal Zhukov burst in and seized Beria. From his cell, Beria bombarded Malenkov with letters begging for his help and mercy for his family. On the 22nd of December, he was sentenced to death by a secret political court on trumped-up charges of treason and terrorism. Beria was stripped to his underwear, hands manacled and attached to a hook on the wall. He frantically begged to be allowed to live, making such a noise that a towel was stuffed in his mouth. His eyes bulged over the bandage wrapped around his face. His executioner, General Batitsky, later promoted to marshal for his role, fired directly into Beria's forehead. He was cremated. His protege and then rival, Abakumov, was tried for the Leningrad case and shot in December 1954. Many of Stalin's crimes were blamed on them. Khrushchev emerged as the dominant leader. Malenkov was removed as premier and replaced by Bulganin. In 1956, Khrushchev, backed by Mikoyan, famously denounced Stalin's crimes in his secret speech. 5 years later, Stalin's body was removed from the mausoleum and buried in the Kremlin wall. In 1957, Molotov, Kaganovich, and Malenkov, backed by Voroshilov and Bulganin, managed to overthrow Khrushchev in the Presidium. However, Khrushchev mobilized the Central Committee, flying in his supporters in planes, organized by Marshal Zhukov. At a plenum, Stalin's murderous magnates scrambled to blame one another for their crimes. Sleeves rolled up, axe in hand, they lopped off heads. Zhukov accused Khrushchev himself. Khrushchev attacked Malenkov, who replied, "Only you are completely pure, Comrade Khrushchev." Kaganovich insisted that the whole Politburo signed the death lists. Khrushchev accused him back, but Kaganovich roared, "Didn't you sign death warrants in Ukraine?" Finally, Khrushchev shouted, "All of us taken together aren't worth Stalin's shit." It was the closest Stalin's henchmen came to a day of reckoning. Molotov, Kaganovich, and Malenkov were sacked. Kaganovich and Malenkov were respectively dispatched to run a power station and potash factory in distant regions. Molotov became Soviet representative at the UN Atomic Agency in Vienna, so that he was present, ignored in the background, when President Kennedy and Khrushchev met there with their delegations in June 1961. Khrushchev, like Stalin before him, became premier as well as first secretary. Marshal Zhukov became defense minister as a reward for his help, but his pugnacity and fame threatened the increasingly vainglorious Khrushchev, who sacked him for Bonapartism. By 1960, when the senile Voroshilov retired as president, Khrushchev and Mikoyan were the last of Stalin's magnates in power. During the Cuba Missile Crisis, it was Mikoyan who flew to Havana, accompanied by his son Sergo, to persuade Castro to agree to Khrushchev's compromise, and then on to Washington to talk to Kennedy. Mikoyan, who had helped carry Lenin's coffin, also attended JFK's funeral. After the scare of the missile crisis, Khrushchev was overthrown in 1964 by a cabal of Stalin's young stars, Brezhnev, Kosygin, and their eminence grise, Sushlov, who ruled until their deaths in the 80s. Mikoyan survived even this upheaval and became president, retiring in 1965. The old magnates found it hard to cope with their fall. They had expected to be arrested, so were all relieved to be alive. When he left his apartment in the Kremlin in 1957, Kaganovich found that the magnates did not even own their own towels or sheets. These famous and blood-spattered old pensioners spent their retirements writing their memoirs, receiving Stalinist admirers, avoiding the hostile stares of former victims they encountered in the street, applying for readmission to the party, and shuffling through papers in the Lenin Library. Spotting them became a thrilling form of living archaeology. Happily and lovingly reunited, Molotov and Paulina remained unapologetic Stalinists. Svetlana wrote that visiting them was like entering a paleontological museum. Khrushchev admitted being up to his elbows in the blood of his victims, and that burdens my soul. He defied his successors by dictating his selectively honest memoirs, dying in 1971. Mikoyan wrote frank but equally selective memoirs until his death in 1978. Three others survived into another era. Molotov and Malenkov survived to see the accession of Gorbachev. Kaganovich lived until 1991, witnessing the beginning of the end of the Soviet Union that he had helped build. The magnate's children have enjoyed mixed fortunes and take very different views of Stalin and their parents' roles. It is no surprise that, for some of them, the passionately optimistic ideals of Marxism, Leninism, Stalinism, and the imperial triumphs of the Generalissimo's armies remain as potent and persuasive as the presence of Stalin himself. Old Molotov was asked if he dreamed about Stalin. "Not often, but sometimes. The circumstances are very unusual. I'm in some sort of destroyed city, and I can't find a way out. Afterwards, I meet him."